The comedy The Nerd runs through May 20th at the George Street Playhouse in New Brunswick. The Nerd, directed by Kevin Cahoon, and the playwright was Larry Hsu. And joining us are two stars of the show, Jonathan Kite, who plays Rick Stedman, and Kate Reinders, who plays Tansy McGinnis. Thanks to both of you for joining us on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Why do you think, even though it's set in the late 70s, it's still relevant today?
I think that sort of what it's about is it's a play about obligation and the obligations that we put upon ourselves, that we sort of create that. And I think that it's very relatable to people. And I think it's about being polite. And I think that that is sort of, you know, we all have these different versions, and you sort of see it from the dinner party characters of what each of their definitions of being polite in society with strangers and with friends and how we sort of relate to people and the obligations and that we put upon ourselves in our own situations, even in our own houses. And I think that that's still current today. And I think that it has to do, part of it is with America always seems to be at war. And so this is about two soldiers that were in the Vietnam War together. And there's sort of an obligation to treat one another with, you know, just open arms and love and respect, because obviously what happened after the Vietnam War, there wasn't a parade, there wasn't any of this stuff, you know. So I think soldiers went through something very specific together. And so I think that it's sort of about a lot of things that are still going on in America today. I mean, we were fighting a different war and there were different social constructs back then. But, you know, we're sort of, everything has evolved. The wars have evolved, but they're the same. And the social, you know, being social with has evolved, but it comes from the same roots. And so I think it's sort of two ideas that are sort of colliding together and see how people interact. And I think people can still sense, you know, how that is alive and well in the world today.
And along with what Jonathan was saying about what the show's about, I think it's also, for my character especially, it is also about friendship and about a family that you create for yourself with your friends. And also then when you do that, it extends, he was saying, like the politeness and the open arms and all that stuff of how you feel like you want to help your family slash friends shoulder obligations, sort of. And
yeah, it feels like millennial friend groups, or that's what people's families are today a mm-hmm. lot of times, you know. And this is what this is. It's about, it's essentially the core of the play is three friends.
And actually there's also some like women's
that's
change
huge.
Happening, which is happening again.
Yeah.
And because we are a little bit Anne Harada, who is the other woman in the show, she and I are both kind of you know, obvious types of women. She is the wife and mother and school teacher. And I am the trying to be a career woman, young, you know,
well,
break out.
Right. She's like the trapped idea that
uh-huh.
sort of stayed
the past.
Right.
And I'm trying to be the future.
Right. Exactly. So there's a lot of ideas that are presented in a subtle way.
Were you a nerd growing up in Illinois?
I mean, the funny thing is like the term here's a, we never say the word nerd in the play. It's never said.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's the best title, honestly.
It's not, you know, and because he's played Rick Stedman, the character, he's played, you know, I've seen him play like a ton of different ways, and there's no real, there's nothing about him, even in the description when you're reading the play, that says a nerdy whatever.
It's not like he loves science and math. Like,
right.
It has nothing to do with that.
The atypical. But I think because of like the way that we think of nerd now with the internet, like mm-hmm. everybody's a nerd for something, you know?
Right.
And it's like, but we've sort of taken that as like a hobbyist, that people have sort of transformed and evolved even the definition of nerd. I'm not sure what, you know, my interpretation is could be different than Larry. I don't know. I'm saying I'm trying to be as close and as honest to the text and the intention as I possibly can. But I look at him as somebody who is more of like a social outcast.
We're speaking with two of the stars of the latest George Street production, The Nerd, running through May 20th. Jonathan Kite, who people remember was the hilarious Ukrainian chef Oleg in the CBS comedy series Two Broke Girls. And Kate Reinders, who's been in many productions, including on Broadway, shows like Gypsy, Something Rotten, and playing Glinda in Wicked. Kate Reinders for this comedy, The Nerd, at George Street Playhouse. How much fun has it been for you so far?
Oh, well, this has maybe been the most fun ever. But, I mean, mainly, I would say, because our director, Kevin Cahoon, is one of my best friends. And he's a wonderful director, but also one of the best actors ever also. And he has brought together this group of amazing people. So it's not that we're all funny and, you know, having a good time, but, well, yes, we are. We're all having a good time. That's the point.
Maybe you could run the cast down for us quickly.
Okay, so it's us, and then Zach Schaefer, and Colin Hanlon, and Stephen Wallum, and Hayden Bursey, and I already said Anne Harada.
Yeah.
Am I forgetting anybody?
No.
That's it.
That's us. Yeah. That's the seven.
See, so it's like, it is a little family.
And have you worked at all together, any of you?
Worked with Anne Harada back in, I think we thought it was 1994 or something, when I was growing up in Michigan. There was a summer stock theater there, and we did the show South Pacific together, and she was Bloody Mary, and I was the little daughter of Emile, who sings Ditumwa Pokwa, whatever. And so I've known her forever, and then... Yeah, and then Colin and Zach, I've known them through Kevin. But Jonathan and I actually, the first year of Two Broke Girls, it shot on the Warner Brothers lot. And the way they have the stages, they're like four back-to-back, or is it like they're in little quads?
It's two that connect
usually.
It's
really two, yeah. But it's like in the little, anyway, so we were like,
yeah.
So we were actually in two that were back-to-back and shared a hallway and shared hair and makeup people. And but my show was very, very, very short-lived, called Work It. But so we saw each other in passing a little bit, but that was back in 2010.
How much pride did you take in that long-running comedy?
It was amazing. That was one of the things that I always wanted to do, I mean, my whole life. I always wanted to be a part of a hit sitcom because I really liked growing up and watching shows like Roseanne and Golden Girls and stuff like that. And it was sort of your family inviting a family into their household every week to sort of see what was going on with them. And we didn't watch a lot of TV, but we did a lot of stuff together. But the shows that we did watch together, we all watched them as a family. And so I always had a fantasy to be a part of something that would be that I loved that show so much. I loved the people on that so much. And that I really believed in the work and something that I thought was a really cool thing to be a part of, because, you know, it was like 2011 is when we premiered, and that was really when there was a huge movement, very active and very obvious in Hollywood, saying like, we need more roles for women. And our show was one of the first shows ever that was about two women who decided to put their career first instead of have families. And it was very cool, and it was about, you know, small businesses in America, and it took place in New York, and there's a lot of amazing things that sort of helped make up that whole thing, and it was a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I never had a rainy day being on set.
Hello, I am the chef.
Here we go. Ukraine's gonna try to invade Poland. It's double D-Day. Oleg, this is our neighbor Sophie.
I would like to have a plate with sausage on it while I look over the menu.
Yowza. You are like someone's supersized Victoria's Secret angel. I'd like to Giselle on your bunchins.
Great comedy is about writing and timing. So how about in The Nerd? How long did it take for all of you to really start making some magic?
Oh my goodness, it was so hard. It's a deceptively hard show.
It's one of the hardest shows I've ever been a part of.
The lines are written in a very specific, funny way, but that sound very natural and and then I mean, but your thing is like, that's actually how it's written. So in a way, you think, oh, I hope the audience doesn't think I'm messing up right now, because
yes.
I'm actually working really hard to be word, or like, you know, fake word perfect. But So it was hard that way, but also because you said timing is everything, and the nerd especially is like, bam, 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 bam. It is so fast. And it's, we all have to be together and on it because it's like a fast ball that is moving. And once it's dropped,
it's dropped. Hard. Yeah, it's hard to pick up.
New Jersey is blessed with having great local theater, and the George Street Playhouse is just one of many. When you've been in Something Rotten, and you've been in Gypsy, and you've been in Wicked on Broadway, and you come to a local theater that has great reputation, is there any difference when you're performing for an audience that's kind of right on top of you there?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's definitely, it's more intimate, which is nice. And it feels like our own private sort of secret party every night with a bunch of friends. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
How do you feel about
it? I love it. I mean, I think that that's something that, especially in comedy, I think the intimacy helps. I think when comedy gets too, you know, when you try to see a comedy, it's like when a stand-up comedian performs on a stage that's too big. I think that this really, the setting for this show, the space is just right.
We're speaking with Jonathan Kite and Kate Reinders. Jonathan, you are a stand-up comedian. And I tell people in my classes that I think that's the toughest job there is. Is it tougher to be a stand-up comedian or to be in a play like this?
I mean, the stand-up thing is tough. I think was tough for me in a different sort of way because I came to it so late in life. I didn't start doing it until after I had done a year or so on Two Broke Girls. But because that's not the track that people usually take whenever I would go do a club or a theater or something.
They already knew they are, you.
Right, and they assumed that it was like Ray Romano or Chris Rock or somebody who had done it, you know, and then had just got a sitcom or something. And I thought, no, that's not the way. And so the expectation, I think, was extremely high. And so I had to write an hour very, very quickly, which is not the way that I would recommend people do it. But it's, you know, I think it's also getting people, you know, you have to not necessarily have to have a style, but you have to, it's like the same thing with the farce. Like once we drop the ball, it's so hard to pick it up again. And so you know, the good thing is we have each other. But if you drop the ball as a stand-up, you have nothing. I mean, I remember I did I was in Buffalo, New York about 2 years ago, and I was doing, this was even before like Trump was a thing. I mean, he was always a thing, you understand what I'm saying, but he, you know, and I made a lot of Trump jokes, and there had been a rally or something big, and this woman started yelling at me from the audience. And I didn't say anything like, A, false, or B, so disgusting and inappropriate that people would have to challenge me. I wasn't like, Trump is responsible for the Holocaust. Good night, everyone. I didn't like that. But I said something where I didn't like his policy on something, and I backed it up. I wasn't just making outrageous, you know, gratuitous claims. And then I did a Trump impression, and this woman stood up and started arguing with me in the comedy. This is a packed room, 300 seats full. And then I didn't agree with her, and I had a mic, and I was louder than her, but I didn't scream. But I realized at that moment, like, because I had given anything to this person other than, you know, please, you know, maybe I'll come and see you do stand up sometime, but you're seeing me, then I couldn't get the ball back. And it was a moment that I'll never forget on stage because it was, I couldn't get the ball back up in the air after that. And I had 40 minutes left of a show. And so it really teaches you about environment and reacting and what you can react to and what you should react to. And so, and I think that that's a big thing because you're sort of never, the terrain always feels familiar, but at least we know where we're going every night with the play. And with stand-up, you're sort of always in murky water, even when it's going well. And I'm not a defeatist. I think the shows are amazing and I love stand-up, but it's like stand-up is one of those things where literally anything could happen at any night. Like, and if somebody, and if these people were huge Trump supporters and I had no idea, then I had a fight on my hand before I even went in the room.
I'd like to ask both of you this question. We'll start with you, Kate. Who was the first person that told you you were funny?
Oh, actually, wow. I really did not think I was funny. And I remember it was the summer when I met Kevin Cahoon. I just done Gypsy, the Bernadette Peters one on Broadway, and I auditioned for this thing at New York Stage and Film Festival at Vassar College for the summer, this show called Nerds, and it was just, you know, a story about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and funny. Well, it was a musical that was going to come to Broadway maybe last year or the year before or something, but it fell through. Anyway, and I auditioned for that, and I got it, and I remember thinking, oh, well, then I guess they thought I was funny. And I had this feeling about that show. And actually, something else came up that my agent said, maybe you want to audition for this thing. And I said, you know, I have a feeling about the show Nerds. I really want to do it. And that's where I ended up meeting Kevin Cahoon and my best friend Sarah Litzinger. And they are two of the funniest people I know still to this day. And Sarah and I actually started a comedy duo shortly thereafter. Called Tasty Skank, and we actually won an award once. So I say, I mean, we are award winning, so, you know, officially funny, right? Can't deny it. But that was the first time I thought that I, you know, somebody told me I was funny. 2004.
Jonathan?
Oh, man.
Your whole life. 2018. You came out of the womb.
I don't know. When I was a little kid, I think my mother told me that I was funny. And what I used to do, I think like the first routine I ever did when I was really little, my mother worked downtown in Chicago, and she would take me to work with her when I was like a little turd. And we would go to Dunkin' Donuts and we would get the munchkins, the little donut holes and the little box of them. And my mom would be like, all right, I'm going to go to work now. And she worked at Clear Channel. And so it was all these, it was like a huge building on Michigan Avenue. It was a huge floor with tons of people. And, you know, and I would walk around the entire floor and she just let me go, like Lord of the Flies style. And I walked around to all the offices and I gave donuts and I would tell jokes as a little, like a tiny, tiny little dude. And I remember my mother had a boss. Or the guy who was like, who had a corner office. I have no idea how he was, you know, in the company. And I remember going in there and I would stay there and he would go, well, what voices are you doing? Or like, what's going on? And I remember doing Bill Cosby as like a 4-year-old kid or something.
Oh,
or 5.
Oh, my goodness.
And like doing Bill Cosby or something like that. And giving out the donut holes. And then people would come. I would eventually, like, they would sort of know I was coming. And so they would stand up on their cubicle. And then I would just kind of walk with the thing was like my size. I was as big as the thing I was carrying. It's like I looked like somebody who was coming back from like the river in Africa over my head, you know? And I would just walk around and give away donut holes.
That is the cutest thing I've ever heard.
Did any of those people that you, you know, at that early age, did they contact you once you were on Two Broke Girls and say, I knew that you were always going to be?
Can I tell you something? That you actually said something even earlier. When I was in preschool, even before that, maybe when I was like 3, there was a woman who was my teacher who contacted me on Facebook. And she said, I remember you as being a super, super, super funny kid. And I just remember like seeing the Facebook message from her because she's like, you used to sing Wizard of Oz. Or she, like, what did she say? She used to say things. And I was like, I vaguely remember doing that. But then she's like, but anyway. So that was even prior to the donut thing, I think. But I didn't think of that till just now.
So then you two have a different connection. You used to sing Wizard of Oz. You sang in Wicked, so you two have this.
I know, I saw her in Chicago. That's 100% before we were friends.
The original,
I saw her, yes.
Production, right?
It was
because he said, I saw Anna Gasteyer, and I was like, well, then you saw me?
It was so, I mean, I'm telling you, that musical, I have now seen it twice, but she was the first I saw, and I took my mother and my brother, we went, and it was so good.
I took my daughter to her first Broadway musical, and she saw Kristen Chenoweth as Glinda. Now, I'm a Wicked nut because I have all the tapes when they first started to do that, and I saw how funny she was in preparation before that ever came to Broadway. I have all those tapes, believe it or not. So I have a lot of background about Wicked. But young girls all want to be Glinda or Elphaba. So for you to sing songs like For Good and things that my daughter will never forget the words, what was that like?
Well, actually, you know, so I guess every generation has that magical show. And for me growing up, it was Les Mis. And I remember thinking, Les Mis.
Did you want to be Eponine?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I was like, oh, I guess that's a show I'll never be in. But one second after I thought that, I thought, but you know what? If I were a little girl now, I would be dreaming of Glinda. And so I am living I'm living the dream. I actually had that totally too, that moment. I remember when we were first starting in Chicago and I was like up in the bubble behind the curtain waiting for the show to start. And you know, you get in the bubble at places and then they crank you on up there. So you're high up there and you have some alone time. But I remember just thinking like, I'm pinching myself right now because this is my dream and I don't think it gets better than this.
And also, you got to do, I mean, Les Mis is an amazing, amazing, amazing show. It's also so heavy. And that's it, you know, like for you to do your dream and to be something that people want to do. Like, Wicked is such a fun show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like everyone's laughing and smiling. There's great life lessons. And it's like, because whenever we would have like a hard day of the nerd, I was like, well, at least it's not Trial at Nuremberg. You know, because it's like whenever you do comedy, and you know, because the nerd is about 2.5 hours with intermission, you know, 2:15 without, you know, it's like that's the amazing thing that you were such an important part of, like an amazing thing that girls and a lot of people want to be a part of, young people, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And entertaining, and it's like you know.
And it's about friendship.
Yes. And there's all these life lessons that it's good. It's teaching people smart, you know.
You have great taste, though, because Les Mis will always be my favorite.
Well, so yes. It's Les Mis.
I love Les Mis.
Jonathan, what's been the best comment after a show from somebody who came up to you at George Street Playhouse after The Nerd? What's been the best comment you got that's meant the most to you so far?
Wow. What was it? Oh, somebody in the... Oh, go ahead. You talk.
No, I was going to say our first talkback.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I thought you would. Yeah.
We had three talkbacks for previews. Those were really fun. One time, though, I'll tell you, I don't know if you thought of this, but this woman was at the first talkback, and I heard it as I was going on stage, and this was just popped in my head. I don't know if this was my favorite, but I think this was the most amusing. So Two Broke Girls was on for like 6 years, and I was the only white guy on the show. And this woman who like read the program was like, oh, yeah, I know him from Two Broke Girls. And then she said out loud, like, who was he? And I was like, I was the Asian guy. I was like, wait, what? You knew me from the show, but you didn't know who I was? Like, that I heard her as I was going on stage, and I didn't want to say anything, you know? But I was kind of like, I had one of those moments where I stopped and had an aside to myself, like, what? But we had a lot of interesting comments.
We had this sweet, sweet, sweet old man who said it was the most he'd laughed in 50 years.
Yes, that's what I was thinking about. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly. Powerful.
He was, but he was so genuine.
He was wonderful.
It was so sweet. The talkbacks were really enjoyable. The people, I mean, and then every night people were staying more and more and more out of the three, and you know, and they were. They had such pleasant faces, you know, because it's like when we're exhausted and we're like all like leaning on each other.
And in previews, you know, we were rehearsing during the day still. Yeah. So we'd been there all day.
Yes. And we were not that we were in bad moods or just our brains are just kind of like
fried.
Mush.
Yeah.
And then just to see these like smiley people in the seats, and they just looked very.
So supportive.
Yes.
But I think that just shows what George Street is. I mean, it's a whole community.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, I like to cry and to be involved in and watch very serious things, but is there any better thing than to make somebody laugh?
No.
I don't think so.
No, because
the world makes us cry enough.
I mean, that's the thing. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
It's like that's like the greatest thing. That's like a magic trick. And I think that's what I thought when I was a kid. if you can make somebody's life better, which doesn't necessarily mean, but to laugh is a genuine response, you know? And it's like, if you can elicit that, that I think that that's, it comes from a place deep within them, which is why I love doing live stuff, because it's a shared experience. So the laughter of other people, plus what's happening on stage, engages more laughter. You know, it's like a ripple effect.
Well, and laughter is one of those things. I had a baby almost a year ago.
He is so cute.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
But you know, you just, it opens up your world. And I mean, I don't have to tell you because you're a father, but I remember the first time he laughed, or, and you think, he's a baby. He doesn't, how does he know how to, like, where does laughter come from? I mean, if anything makes you believe in God, I feel like laughter is one of those things. It's this magical, you can't explain it, who knows why. And to be a part of it every night.
Yeah.
There's nothing better.
Yeah. That's why I got into this game, I think. Part of it was I thought, because when I was a kid, I got in trouble a lot. And I remember thinking one day it clicked in my head that people could make a living at making people laugh. And I always thought that was like making people laugh. I always thought was the greatest thing in the world. That was like, I had all the respect when I was a little kid for those people the most. And I thought, oh my God, you can make a living doing this thing that I think is the greatest thing. And then you listen to, I'll just listen backstage every night because they go on first, her, Zach, and Colin, and I will listen every single night. And then when Colin comes back, when he changes his code, I'm always like, they sound great, you know, because like I'm listening to them and I'm listening to the audience, and not to like judge the audience or not to be like, oh great, this show's not good or it's going to be amazing, but I like to listen to the audience. I like to hear them make the audience laugh. That just makes me happy.
When you meet people, do they expect you to have a Ukrainian accent?
Well, a lot of times. I mean, I shaved my beard. You know, I used to have a really long beard, and I used to have long... I said it looked like I was living a production of Jesus Christ Superstar. I looked like a Ted Neely, like Family Tree. They did for a very long time, and then this show sort of, you know, it's been... I mean, we were on in 2011. It's now 2018, and... That's one of the reasons I got into stand-up. One of the main reasons, because I couldn't convince people that I was American-born, and so even when my agents and managers call people, they're always this past pilot season, a lot of people were like, "We can't take him because we're not looking for a Russian," and they were like, "He's an American guy from Illinois."
He's from Illinois.
Yeah, I know. Which isn't to say that I couldn't be Russian, but right. They were just like, "He's a Midwest guy," and so. It's so funny. So I mean, but yes, more than I ever imagined, people thought of me as Ukrainian for years.
Other than family members, who's coming to see you in The Nerd that means the most to you outside of family?
Oh, our best friends, I guess, right?
Yeah, you guys have, that's the one thing, I'm an LA guy. I mean, I live in LA and they're all, you know, Islanders, New Yorkers. They have the most, it's ridiculous how many people show up.
Especially Kevin and Colin and Zach.
Yeah, but.
I mean, they've been friends forever and they have this huge, wonderful group of great,
supportive people.
I mean,
people.
Just so supportive.
Like every show.
There was a party bus a couple nights ago.
Yes, that
it was
we all went
awesome.
Back on. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like a, you know, a bus like going to Atlantic City, but instead of Atlantic City, went to George Street.
Yes.
You guys are, it's amazing. I have a lot of friends that are coming from the West Coast, which is a pretty big deal because it's 3,000 miles. And I have most of my, like my super, super close friends will be here. And then my mother will be here. Probably the most important is my mother will be here for Mother's Day.
Mother's Day
weekend, she will be here.
Great.
Nice.
Yes. And my girlfriend came to opening night, which was amazing and so wonderful.
Because she lives in L.A.
So she's from New York, but she lives in L.A. But that was really special that she was here for that. And we had a great time and that was really nice. That meant a lot. And so, but I'm trying to bring them, like it's because I don't expect anybody to come, you know, because I live so far and my friend group is sort of all over. But the fact that, the people are, friends who are just like, wow, we heard you're doing something. We'll come. And so then I thought, wow, that's awesome.
They love you and they also want to laugh.
Yeah, and the show, it's funny, my best friend, my my number one guy in the world. He was the guy that had seen the show, and I talked to him about it before, just sort of, you know, he had known more about it than I did. And then he was like, and I met him. He was my best friend forever. We met playing brothers in Brighton Beach Memoirs as Stanley and Eugene. And so he's my, he opens for me on the road as a stand-up. He's an incredible writer and an actor, Seth Shapiro. And so he's my number one guy. And so he's he lives out in L.A. with me.
So I'm going to ask you each one more question, and I know you have to get rolling here. What lullaby are you singing to your little guy?
Oh, well,
you have this beautiful voice, so you have all these shows that you could sing.
Yes, well, I mainly sing to him the lullaby from Mary Poppins, the Stay Awake. Don't rest your head.
So that much.
One.
Keep going for a little bit.
No, and I do. But his favorite though is "I Love You a Bushel and a Peck," and you can do that up tempo. You can do that as a lullaby. You know, whatever you need.
You know what though, your son is going to grow up with ridiculous, inaccurate expectations because his parents are such good singers.
Well, yes, my husband has a voice of gold, of golden butter, honestly, and. But what's funny, though, is
Tell people about your husband.
Oh, Andrew Samonsky is his name. And he's the dreamiest, but he's also a goober.
He is dreamy.
Yeah.
I met him at the premiere.
But he's also a goober. But people
you could
don't
tell
know
he's
that.
Got a
it's
good
like,
sense of humor.
Oh,
you
yeah,
could tell.
Yeah,
right away.
We have so much fun. We laugh. I mean, we that's all we do. No, but our son, Luke, is his name. He doesn't like it when we do, like, big power singing. So so Andrew had to, I don't remember what he was singing. It was something big, and he was like, and he didn't like that. But, and I was singing something soprano-y, and he didn't like that. But he likes it when we do fun, cute songs with him, so we do a lot of that. We dance, too. And he's big into Moana. He can definitely recognize the Moana songs.
He's not even a year.
No, he's
wow.
10 months.
The
we had music together class yesterday.
Grandmother's pretty cool in Moana.
Oh, so cool.
Right?
I love that movie.
Beautiful song when she sings.
Yeah.
That's great stuff. And the question I have for you, Jonathan, is of all the impressions that you do, maybe your favorite one?
I mean, I like to do... I don't know. It sort of changes, to be honest with you. I'm trying to do Anthony Bourdain right now, and the thing is, like, you gotta, because the internet is so fast. If you learn an impression and you go out, like New York or this Jersey, I consider like this East Coast, sort of Boston, all these guys, Philly, they, you know. Everybody here is sort of up on everything, and then I think that, but a lot of the middle of the country, if like. Charlie Day, the actor, doesn't have a movie in theaters right now. People don't know who he is. But Chicago, the East Coast, and the West Coast, they do know him. And so for me, I'm trying to figure out if enough people know who Anthony Bourdain is. But I've been working on Anthony Bourdain, so that's like my favorite impression to do right now.
Some places you go, and you never forget them. How you got there, what you learned, and the dragons you had to face along the way. What were once figurative are now literal. I came to this land in search of gratuitous nudity, and I'm leaving with what doctors are now calling a truly inoperable broadsword wound. This is Parts Unknown, Westeros.
But what you people can't see is that his face also became Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
Jonathan, okay, so like impressions are almost like scary or like a little bit creepy, I think, when they're so good. And Jonathan can do everyone.
I thought about maybe doing the cast, but I don't have anybody yet.
No, please don't. I mean, I don't want to know that's what I'm like, because I know what's going to be completely dead on.
I always liked impressions because I have a very impressionable voice. I always said I sound like the first half of a NyQuil commercial. And so I can never get better. You know what I mean? Or like.
No, you do. He's brilliant. But he did a couple the other, we were having dinner at the theater a couple, like what, last week?
Yeah.
And he just like popped out a couple and we were all just like, scared and amazed and everything at the same time.
Oh, well, Kevin always has me do Trump. And then Stephen always banishes Trump from the dressing room. That happens like almost every day. Like if Kevin brings somebody back, I'll just go into Trump, and then Stephen Wallum is like, no, no, you got to get out of here.
Well, you're going to have to catch one of his performances if you're going to hear him do Trump. You don't do any jazz performers. You know, we're a jazz station.
I know you are. I thought about trying to learn. There's guys who, not me, but there's guys who do really great musical instruments with their mouths, you know, like Michael Winslow, who's one of my idols of all time. I love him so much. And I thought about incorporating more music because I was trying to do musical impressions and stuff. And so it's crossed my mind. I'll say that. But my buddy Steve Beniquist, I got to shout him out real quick. He does an unbelievable NPR jazz DJ character where it is so funny, where he does a giveaway constantly, and it's about, and his catchphrase is wine and jazz. And he does, and his name is like Bebo Bryson or Bebo Wilson or something. And it's based off of DJs at NPR jazz stations. And he does this whole routine on it. It's so, so funny. So shout out to Stevie B.
I love it. And it's been wonderful talking to Jonathan Kite and Kate Reinders. It's two of the stars of The Nerd, running through May 20th at the George Street Playhouse. What should we call this play then, if not The Nerd?
I don't know. I thought about it. Is it like, should it be like, not like The Visitor or the...
Well, that's what I was going to say, the house guest. Or something.
We'll get back to... Well, no, we won't get back to you. I'm like, but I want to think about it. But at the same time, it's done. It's The Nerd. That is the name that it will
But it's so
be.
Funny, it never comes up in the play, not once.
No, I know. So what would you call it?
And the tickets have
the
been
Rick
printed,
Stedman
so.
Show. I mean...
The Rick Stedman Show. I mean... I think it would be called, I don't know, I kind of like The Visitor, but I feel like there's like 100 plays.
And then it also kind of sounds like it's a scary.
A ghost story?
Yeah.
They're like. There's
somebody from outer space.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's probably pretty accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, from Planet Stedman.
Rick Stedman is played by Jonathan Kite, and Tansy McGinnis is played by Kate Reinders, two of the stars of The Nerd. Everybody looks forward to seeing it, and you got to get there quick. May 20th, it's counting down. So thanks so much to both of you for joining us on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you.
Thank you.